You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Time for the Bob Ryan, Jeff Goodman, Tagway Along for the Ride podcast right here. And we are sponsored by FanDuel, the official wagering partner of the CLNS Media Networks. Guys, generally we talk about the NBA, but with the passing of the general, Bobby Knight, of course, that is going to be a big part of the show. Just one of the more controversial, I don't, Bob Ryan could probably come up with a better word. Bob, give me... Yeah, I know Jeff covered him in college. Bob, give me the word, the one word to describe Bobby Knight besides complicated.
Besides complicated. Besides unrepentant. Besides, just flawed. Flawed. A flawed genius. Flawed. There's so many aspects of the guy, but he. The people don't know about it. I mean, I only have the public image, you know, 90% right. Of people have formed their opinions based on what they've seen, you know, play out or what they read. And I've never been in his company in various circumstances to see, interesting man, a truly interesting man who had his own very rigid and unyielding worldview, in which he was the center of a universe and did no wrong. He didn't think he did anything wrong ever.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he was a lightning rod. That's kind of what he was, right? You either loved him or you hated him. Right. You know, that there was no in between with Bob Knight, but you respected the hell out of him as a coach, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, he was that good at what he did, right? He was old school. He would hold kids accountable on the court and in the classroom.
Classroom. Thank you. Classroom.
Yeah.
Thank you for
saying
that.
Didn't cheat. And he didn't cheat. That was one of his big things, right? I'm not paying players. I'm going to get guys in. I'm going to hold them accountable. They're going to get better. They're going to hate me while they're there. They're going to hate me. And I've said this, kind of like Jim Calhoun. Calhoun's players hated him when they played for him. And then when they left, they understood what he did to make them better people and better players.
Some of them, not all of them. And one's superior talent, you know, and the example I always cite, and I've written about it. It should be online today, which is Thursday, and it will be in the Globe print on Friday morning. Quinn Buckner. Oh yeah, and he loved Quinn Buckner, and Quinn Buckner loved him. Yeah. But Quinn Buckner is an extraordinary, you know, a high class human being and a very smart person. I'm telling you, at the end of his tenure in Indiana, we would see these guys in the tournament, and it also at Texas Tech. And when the season was over and they had lost, it was thank God it's over.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. They were worn out. And didn't need any. It wasn't. Oh, gee, we can't play any more games. It's God, thank God, it's over. No, it's not that simple that they all loved them. The better players may have loved them, but he had one gear and one plan and no plan B. Right. And in the end, it was counterproductive. I mean,
motion offense, right, Bob? Motion offense, man to man defense. He was never gonna deviate.
No. And but he's I had a on and off 32 year relationship, with him. And it started off with him yelling at me in the tunnel before the 1976 championship game against Michigan. And it ended with him jousting and having fun and at a press conference in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, when he was coaching Texas Tech, when we were going to play BC. And it was funny. And it's all in my book, boys. It's all in there. My chapter on Bob Knight. It's all in there.
I remember.
And I got to tell you one story, though, about the good side that people should know. It's a fascinating story. In 1994, BC is going to play Indiana in round of 16 in Miami in the East Regional. And I called him up to get a preview story about maybe say on Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, the game was on Friday. And so they were still at home. So it was Monday, it was early in the week. I called him up and we in the course of the conversation, he said, "What's going on with O'Brien at BC?" And this is when Jimmy O'Brien was in a battle to get a new contract with the Chet Gladchuk, who was then the athletic director at BC. And I said, "He's having trouble with Chet Gladchuk. You can't get this guy." He said, "All right, here's what you do." He said, "You ask me a question on Thursday. You go on a press conference." I said, "Yes." He said, "You ask me a question about BC. I will take it from there." So we get there on Thursday. I don't know exactly what I did. Some innocuous question about BC. Off he goes. He said, I'm going to quote it, okay? Because it's got to be quoted, okay? And I got my book here. Hold it. And okay. Here's what he said. "A lot of people around the country ask me who would be a good candidate to coach their team and who they should talk to. And if I was going to hire a coach today, Jimmy O'Brien is the guy I'd want to talk to. I mean, here's a guy who went 1-15 with these kids as freshmen in the Big East, and he works with them and he keeps them going, hoping one day will be your day. And that day is here for Boston College." Now, that's a Minchy thing to do. That's a fantastic thing for him to do. And that was what he was capable of, good things, works like that. His taking in of Landon Turner after he was paralyzed from the accident is famous, and you can look that up and what he did for Landon Turner. Yeah, he did. But boy, he could. There were other, and I can cite other. I had other good circumstances with him, but there was a cantankerous, arrogant, condescending, and side of him that manifested itself far too often. And then there was all this juvenile behavior, throwing at a chair, and the choking of Neil Reed, which he denied, but which they have video to show that he did put his hand on it.
Grabbing a student's arm,
he brought up a whip.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, remember, the initial thing that people became aware of was the 1975-76 season, his undefeated season, he grabbed, they're winning the game by 25 points or so, but he's upset about something that Jim Wiseman did. And he grabs Jim Wiseman by the shirt and he's yelling at him and they win the game. And I was one of the many people who wrote a column about it. And I did resort to the cliche of, "Would you want your son to play for Bob Knight?" Okay, yep. So here's what happened. We get to the Final Four and we get to the night of the championship game in Philadelphia in the Spectrum. And Kurt Gowdy says to me, I had a casual relationship with Kurt Gowdy. And he says to me, "Hey, let's take a walk." I don't know if you remember the Spectrum, Jeff and Gary, but you could walk all the way around the building underneath. There was a walk pathway all the way around the building. So Chet and I are walking and we run it tonight. And he says, "Bob, hey, Chet, Bob, you know Bobby Ryan, Bobby, you know Bobby Ryan." And he goes, "Ah, some people ought to," he starts growling. And he goes, "writing things they don't know anything about," and blah, blah, blah. And he's screaming and yelling. And as he had seen, he knew I was one of these people who had written that column. And that was my first serious encounter. Hello, okay. This is just an hour and a half before the championship game.
But that's, he liked that. He thrived. He did. And I know Pat, his son, well. And Pat, he thrived on some of those. He needed some of that. He didn't want to be liked by everybody. In fact, I think he thrived on people hating him. And he was going to do it his way. I'll give you. So I didn't know him super well, obviously, because, you know, when I came in, Texas Tech wasn't great. So the first deal I had with him was I was there for the first time at Texas Tech. I went to Lubbock when he was going to break the record. Now, he didn't end up breaking the record. It was right before, I think, Christmas. So I didn't stick around. It was either before Christmas or New Year's. So I tried once, and then I was like, all right, my wife's going to kill me if I don't get back home. So I didn't stay for the actual record breaker. But, you know, at this point, I've interviewed pretty much everybody in my career. You know, a lot of big enough people. I'm not intimidated. Generally, I'm not intimidated by anybody in a press conference setting. You know, I dealt with Calhoun and some of these other guys who will go at you, players, whatnot.
Patino.
And I go in the press conference post game and I'm shaking. I'm shaking because I know, like, if I ask the wrong question, this guy's going to absolutely bite my head off. And even if I ask the right one, he might bite my head off.
You know, what's interesting that people don't refer to very often, but I know you'll agree to this. He is a big guy. He was physically intimidating, that was part of the package, and he knew it. Bob Knight was 6'4". Yep. Remember Bob Knight, you know, I mean, guys, people don't know, he was a sixth man on the Ohio State team that won the NCAA in 1960.
Played with Havlicek
and Jerry Lucas. He was a sixth man, but he was a basketball player, and he was a big guy. He looked like a linebacker at the time. Frankly, he knew how to use that as an intimidator. People, no question about it. It's like Frank Martin. Frank Martin knows he's a big guy with these broad shoulders, and he scares the bleep out of people. Bobby Knight could physically scare the bleep out of some people, not everybody maybe, but some people. So it was just, there's so many. I got, you know, there were a million stories, but.
All right. You're Mount Rushmore. You're Mount Rushmore, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Of college basketball coaches, has to include Wooden, has to include Knight, has to include Kay, right? Those are three to have on it.
Indeed. Yeah. I'll stop right there. I'll go to bed on that one.
Krzyzewski played for Knight at Army.
Yeah. Didn't end well. Like they, you know, I wonder if Coach K has any regrets. I don't know if anything happened in the last few months or year, but I know they had a falling out years ago, and
statement is 100%. You know, enthusiasm. I he's my mentor. Yeah. I saw it this morning.
We were looking for that. You're looking for that because you were interested. We know the background. That they didn't get along for years.
Well, he got angry with Coach K after John Feinstein's book.
Yep.
Because he hated the book, the Season on the Brink, and that Coach K is the one who recommended it was Feinstein to Knight. You know.
Oh.
John spent the whole season, living with them to write that book.
Which is amazing that Bob Knight would be okay with that, isn't it?
I was shocked. Well, I agree.
Well, and I maybe he thought he could manipulate Feinstein, but of course he didn't. And of course, it was the launching of John Feinstein's and changed his whole life. You know,
his career.
And it's one of the handful of must read sports books of our lifetime.
I want to read it again. Actually, I might read it again.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a lot of stuff in there. They're like, I'm putting a tampon in Daryl Thomas's locker, and the stuff like that. Bobby wasn't happy to have people know things like that, but anyway. Yeah. So, but he was angry with Coach K at that point, and then I think they got back. Well, it appears Coach K is saying all the appropriately no now.
Sure, of course, sure.
Natural, you know. So you're gonna He was sui generis. There was nobody quite like him ever, obviously, and with the entire package. And you're going to hear a lot of different stories, and there are so many aspects.
I once sat. After a game, Madison Square Garden, me, Billis, Bob Knight, and I can't remember the fourth person, went over to a deli. It had to be like 1 a.m. And I sat across him. He didn't know me at the time at all. I was young, breaking in still. Literally sat across him. Do you know how many words he said to me the entire meal for 90 minutes?
Zero.
I tried to talk to him a couple times. Nothing. Zero.
There's so many. I don't. There's going to be a lot written. You know, I had a column. A column is like 1,000 words to it. So you couldn't begin to scratch the surface of all the stuff. You know, I do recommend my book. However, I have a chapter on Bob Knight, and the I unloaded everything that I could in there. You know, all the stories that I had, and all the stuff. And
I feel bad for his family, guys. I feel bad for his family because the last like 3 years or so, he had dementia.
Right.
You know, I talked to Pat a lot about this, and you know, when he went back to Bloomington two and a half years ago for the first time, Pat was really worried because again, he wasn't remembering much at all at that point. He didn't know how he'd be, and he told me, he said, the switch just flipped for him when he walked into Assembly Hall and the fans, and he saw all his former players. He said it was like it flipped back.
Right.
And just, you know, watch that. If you're like, watch that again, because that was a very, very cool moment for a lot of the old time Indiana fans too, who are in that building. You could see them, you know, starting to cry. And I'm sure they'll cry again, whatever they're going to have for Bob Knight here in the next week in Bloomington. It's going to be special for a lot of those fans who grew up with that era of Indiana basketball.
One of the most fascinating aspects of you know, we got, you know, was his relationship with Bill Parcells. They were very, very close. Right. And it all began at Army when they were, he was the 24, 25 year old coach of the basketball team. And Bill Parcells was a young assistant at the football team. They were both bachelors. They lived near each other and they hung out when day was over. They hung out with each other and they hit it off. You can imagine, you can see how that.
Totally.
Here's my theory on that. Why they, and is that each of them, knew enough about the other guy's sport to act as a sounding board, but never to pretend he knew as much or more.
Right.
See?
Interesting.
Remember, Parcells is his mentor in high school was not his football coach. It was a guy named Mickey, I forget the last name, but was his basketball coach.
Right.
And Parcells was a fan of all sports. Knight, similarly, was a fan of all sports, but that was an interesting friendship. But they really at the peak of both their popularity, you know, it was interesting. Another guy that Knight went fishing in Alaska with in Russia was Ted Williams.
Wow,
but Knight was an outdoors guy. You know, yeah, one reason he loved going. Yeah, he was out
fishing, hunting.
He was a hunting and fishing guy.
Yes,
and he played golf too. But he was, and of course Ted is, you know, the notoriously famous fisherman, but they went fishing together in Russia and trout fishing and endless. He was friend of La Russa, naturally, you know, that you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was fascinating, and I could tell you we don't even have time, but believe me it was not all bad, it was not all good, but you have to acknowledge, don't let anybody pretend that he didn't. That the bad wasn't a problem in his life,
It was a life. He lived a life. The only story I can add to this is, remember Michael Bradley, who was recruited out of Worcester, went to Kentucky.
Oh, certainly,
Worcester.
Yeah.
Because I was working in Worcester at the time, and I remember Bobby Knight called Michael Bradley, and I don't know if that would have been a good fit, but I think Michael went to the right schools. But I also remember Bill Parcells called Michael on behalf of Bobby Knight.
Really, huh?
On that, he's like, I got a call from not only Bobby Knight, then I got a call from Parcells too. There's two things that I want to know. Number one, from Jeff's perspective, how tough was it being his son?
Mm-hmm. Brutal. I mean, when I talked to Pat about it, absolutely brutal. You know, and Pat will fully admit he was not the model son. He would tell me, how about this? And I think he'd be fine with it, saying it now, but, you know, he would go to the bars and he'd get into fights all the time and be belligerent and whatever. And the cops would pull him out like the back door. They would try to protect him.
Right.
And I'm like, but your dad, like, what did he do when he found this stuff out? And he would say, No, my dad never knew. He's like, my mom knew. My dad, they'd never tell him. He never knew any of this stuff. And it was going on like weekly with Pat Knight. So Pat Knight, Bob kicked him off the team. He suspended him. He kicked him off the team. And then he had to earn his way back in on the team. He was that was the one thing. He was the same, exactly the same with Pat Knight as he was with everybody else. And Pat said, you know, obviously it was different once he finished playing with him. If you want to really see something emotional with Bob, it was Pat senior night.
Right.
When he said, listen, I love Woodson. I love Alan Hendrick. Like all these guys, people think my favorite players were those guys. He said, my favorite player was Patrick Knight. And then he walked off the court and literally you could see a tear or two start to come down his face, and he wanted to get the hell in that tunnel before anybody could actually see him cry.
Sure. Wow.
I want, before we go, I want to dispel any thoughts that any Boston-oriented fan would have about did he have his relationship with Bird when Larry Bird went to Indiana?
Right.
Relationship with Larry Bird when he went to Indiana was nil. Larry Bird left Indiana because of he was socially uncomfortable and felt totally overwhelmed by this urban life and the wealth of this other students and everything. He completely
and the size, right? And element. The size of the school.
And, yeah. Right. And Larry Bird went there, he told me, with $75 and one pair of pants that was supposed to last him until he come home for Christmas. Seriously. Okay. And then he wasn't treated well by Kent Benson and the players for scrimmages and all that. Anyway.
How long did he last, Bob?
A month.
He lasted a month.
And Bob Knight told me, this is surprising to some people, he didn't have many regrets. He regretted that he didn't do something to keep Bird.
Really?
That he didn't recognize what was going on, and he could have used him. Here's the thing. That year, they lost in the tournament to Kentucky by 2 points on a night when Scott May was not playing due to a broken wrist. And he could have used one more very useful body that year. Yep. They only lost one game in 2 years. And then the next year, they went undefeated. But anyway, he did expect – I was, like, blown away that he was willing to admit that I should have done something. Yep. I should have saved Larry Bird. So let the record show that.
Little humility. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 money bet. That's $150 if your team wins. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action, NFL. The app is so easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options, including you got spreads, you got your player props, you got over-unders, and more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, official partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. All right, so we wrap up Bobby Knight. Two things we do want to get to. We're going to get to Harden in LA, but we have to talk about the Celtics and the fact that I don't know if they're going to lose at this time. They're undefeated. They should be in this show. They put up
100. All right, Gary. Settle down, Gary. Settle down.
They scored 155 points against Indiana. And which is the second highest total for a Celtic team, I believe.
It certainly is.
Bob, go ahead. What are you thinking of this crew, man?
Obviously, this is almost fixed. It's too good to be true, you know, the idea so far with the starters. And 155 points is mind-blowing, obviously. The thing that we're – I'll get to it. What after the first two games, I was ambivalent because, it's great to win. But the bench thing was terrifying me. They got 12 points off the bench in the first game and 8 points off the bench in the second game. I said, you can't live like this, period. I don't care. You can't go on. Got a little better in the third game. The third game, they got 26 bench points. And, of course, last night when the bench played the whole fourth quarter and Hauser and Pritchard found their range, I know what Jeff's going to say. They didn't do it against the starters, and when it mattered and under pressure, and he's right. But they went up with 63 points off the bench. But they are going to need some reasonable, consistent bench production if they're going to continue, you know, to win games in this league.
But guys, once they get into the postseason, how important is the bench?
Well, you don't know with this group. You lose one starter, you're going to need somebody. So that's the biggest thing is right now you got six and a half, I guess. And you better, to me, I think they're going to have to pick up one more guy.
Yeah.
I think this is clear. Missoula, you know, in the preseason, it was, we're going to give Luke Kornet some minutes. You know, that's kind of the word I got within the organization. And now it's like Luke Kornet never gets on the court when it matters. So you got really six, Pritchard is seven. I think you're going to need one more guy, and I think they're going to have to trade for that one more guy because they're going to understand. Brad Stevens is going to see how close this thing is for them.
Oh, yeah, this is it.
We already know it. Right, we already see it.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned.
Mortgage the picks. Absolutely. Whatever you got to do, win a title this year.
Yes.
Because it has set up, right? Like, what team – Golden State's not what they were. The Lakers aren't what they were. We're not like, yeah, you're scared of Jokic in Denver, but you're not terrified of them now. You got a better overall top six than they do. Milwaukee. Well, yeah, Milwaukee. Like they could beat you, but you easily could or probably should beat them.
Oh, this is the year. You got to go, man.
This is, this is so analogous to 07-08.
No doubt.
It's absolutely totally analogous now. The difference is, obviously, those guys were actually older, much older, and that's what their urgency was. But they believe people thought that they got a 3-year window. Well, they actually did. They could have won three if they didn't gotten injuries in 09 and 10. But this is very analogous. And Doc has stressed. I've talked to Doc about this lately, and he says absolutely. We made it clear that this is this year matters. This is the year that we're not thinking about.
But you can't wear out the top six. I understand, some of them are young, some of them aren't so young, but and some are injury prone. Porzingis, we know. You can't wear them out. Missoula's got to be smart about this year. And to me, it's take a loss here and there if you have to, make sure, like Tatum's playing. I mean, now after last night, he only played 27 minutes, but the first couple nights he put, I mean, his numbers, by the way, the first four games, talk about he's been the most efficient he's ever been.
Yes.
To start, averaging 30 points a game, 9 boards, 4 assists, but he's shooting 56% from the field, 41% from 3, 80 from the line. You know, like honestly, this is what I envision out of Jason Tatum, and he's going to be more efficient now. Why? Because he's got Porzingis. Because he's got Porzingis to help open up the floor. They got to worry about him. So that gives Tatum more space. And then you got two guys at the guard spot that know how to move the ball. No disrespect to Marcus Smart, but come on, man. These guys know how to move the basketball. They know how to get him the ball exactly where he needs it.
I keep asking myself, why did San Antonio let Derek White go? I asked it.
He was making a lot of money for his role. Remember, he was playing like, with DeJounte Murray, but they wanted to really build around DeJounte Murray, and they were like, "This guy's making too much money for what we're trying to do."
That was that. That's going to be
yes.
If he continues,
he's a bargain now. He's a bargain.
This is going to be one of the great coups of pickups in the history of the team, on a par with picking up Don Nelson for $1, and all that, or $100, whatever it was, But no, it's fine. I mean, they're whetting our appetite here. They're teasing us. I mean, 155, is just astonishing. Now, just for the record, Gar, the record was that famous 173-139 game in February 28, 1959, when Russell didn't play. And he didn't play. And Cousy got a then record 28 assists that day.
Oh, unbelievable.
And the funny thing about it is it was during school vacation week. And in the morning, they had a clinic. They did a clinic, and the emphasis of the clinic at Red Hat was on defense. And they went out and got 173 and gave up 139. That was, at that point, the highest scoring game in NBA history. It has since been eclipsed in total points. But anyway, this is teasing. But it's a. I last night I was writing night. Suddenly, and And by the time I got done and I turned on the TV, they were up by 37. On their way to being up by 50. But it's encouraging. As it's exactly. Oh, I got one question for you, Jeff. Is it possible that they got a little find in Brissett to do what he does?
Yes.
That he
yes.
can help win games? He's already helped win one game for sure.
Yeah, I like O'Shea. I always liked him at Syracuse, to be honest. I thought he was kind of that perfect, like, you know, energy, athletic,
yeah,
hybrid forward. He's perfect for this team. Again, you don't need him to do a whole lot. Nobody's paying attention to you. Play hard, defend, be able to switch and defend multiple positions and play with energy. They need somebody in that spot to provide energy more than anything else, and that's what he can do.
That's who's been giving him in the Dixville Notch early season returns. But, you know, that's got my attention.
Pritchard and him have to bring energy, and they do.
And has Holiday found his groove yet?
No, not yet. Oh, no,
exactly.
It's going to take a month. It's going to take a month for
Jordan. Right.
Yeah,
and that's, when he does.
Oh, God, that's good to know. No, it's very good to know. No,
you got to protect Horford. The two guys you got to protect are Horford and Porzingis, right, this year. And to me, that's why you need one more big body by the All-Star break. Like a veteran who can give you 15, 18 minutes, another guy, so that those two can take nights off and you don't have to worry.
Right.
As long as it's not Dwight Howard.
It will not be Dwight Howard.
No, he's in China, right? I believe.
I don't even know if he's playing anymore.
I think he's in China.
Hey, Bob, do a Google search for Dwight Howard.
That name came up at one point. I almost retched.
You're going to find a story that you're going to be a little bit surprised about.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm Googling him right now. Maybe I don't want to. I don't know.
No, you want to do that when we're off the air.
I think he's in China.
Okay, I understand. All right, moving right along.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Harden has found a new home. This drama is finally over. Jeff, I'll start with you on this as he goes to the Clippers.
I pity Lawrence Frank. And I feel bad for Kawhi Leonard, to be honest, and Paul George. Because, you know, listen, at least Kawhi's won a title. You know, Paul George hasn't. You know, they went out back home, Russell Westbrook there. It's like Team LA now. And now they bring Harden back home. All these guys are from the greater Los Angeles area. And they're back together. But, man, I just have a hard time with this. You know, and I like Lawrence Frank a lot. And I understand, like, he's fighting for his job there and to continue to run that organization. But, man, how many chances are we going to give this knucklehead?
I know.
How many chances are we going to give him? Like, enough. Like, blackball him. Blackball him from the league. He's a quitter. He is a multiple quitter on his teammates and franchises. Why do we keep giving him opportunity? Well, why? Because Lawrence Frank thinks that he could be the missing piece. And he is talented. When he wants to be, he's a hell of a player. The problem is, again, like he's a quitter. And honestly, he'll quit on the Clippers at some point. He'll
the
quit
whole package, on it comes under the heading of be careful what you wish for, guys.
Yeah.
And the rest of the league can see it. I'm tired of James Harden. But just technically, you know, is he going to be a mesh with them? I don't see it. What about the other side, Jeff? What about what Philly got? Some, you know, I don't know. I like Covington for what he is. For example,
it's about the picks. It's just about the picks.
I understand.
All that is to get as many first round picks, and they did a good job. I actually think Morey got more than I thought he'd get.
Yeah,
but here's the problem. Unless you flip those picks quickly, you could kiss Joel and be goodbye. Like, it's just a matter of when, right? It's a matter of when does his agent tell Joel, all right, now's the time. Here's what we're going to do. Just like Rich Paul did with Anthony Davis years ago. Anthony Davis is the best kid in the world. But again, at some point, Rich Paul said, you know what? It's not going to work here in New Orleans. Here's right, what we need to do. The same thing is going to happen with Joel and his agent at some point. Joel's awesome. Like, I love him. Love him. I've known him for since he was a freshman at Kansas. And but if I'm Joel's agent, I'm telling him, hey, we're requesting a trade. At the break here, if we're not, if they don't make another move to get you another dude, you need a third guy here to go with Maxey. And if they get a third guy, like, they could be in business.
Oh, yeah, they could. Yeah.
If it's the right third guy, because Maxey, I actually never thought I'd say this, but I think he could be a number two guy now.
Oh, I definitely think he can.
I know you did. You did a while ago. I didn't see that from him. I didn't see it. Like, I'm surprised I'm saying that, but I'm bought in. So he could be a number two guy and a fringe all-star, but they need another dude from these picks, and they need him quickly or else Joel's going
to
be gone.
I'll tell you, there's no lack of people who would volunteer to go drive from Philadelphia to New York to Philadelphia to pick him up and bring him back. The New York paper, you know, the Post is
the missing piece there.
They're always all over it, you know.
Right. And think about him in New York. Like, honestly, he could handle New York, first of all. He could handle the New York media, no problem. You put him with Brunson? I'd give up the whole team other than Brunson. Give up everybody. Everybody in that team's gone. Well, I mean, obviously you can't. You need something in return. But what I'm saying is, who do you want? Randall, Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, take them all. We just want Brunson and Embiid, and we'll build around those two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Harden thing, I'm glad it's over.
I'm glad he's on the West Coast, so we don't have to see him. We don't have to see him as much.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure. We will talk again next week right here. And we are sponsored by FanDuel, the official wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. All right, Jeff Goodman, Bob Ryan, we'll talk to you soon.